Hey there, sex fans. Welcome back. Today is Monday, November 12th, 2012, and you are lucky enough to be listening to the podcast edition of Dr. Dick's Sex Advice with an Edge. And I'm your host, that savagely scintillating sexologist, Dr. Dick.
Haven't seen Carrie, have you? American girl, lovely legs. Wedding guest, nice smell.
No, I haven't seen Carrie. But you know what? I have an exciting show in store for you today. I have not one, but two remarkably talented guests with me as we crank up yet another edition of the Erotic Mind series. Why two guests instead of just one? Well, that's a good question. It all started last summer. Shauna Germain wrote to me suggesting that we do a show about the 50 Shades of Grey phenomenon. She suggested that we provide you all with an antidote to this unfortunate publishing spectacle. Meanwhile, KJB and I were having a similar email exchange, so I came up with the bright idea to have them both on my show at once.
Another glass of whiskey and a cigar. Hold on, make that a bottle of whiskey. We might as well settle in, eh? Let's see if we can push on through till dawn, shall we?
A tantalizing idea. So here we all are, ready to treat you to a marvelous discussion of edgy BDSM erotica and why the good stuff is better for you than the schlock. And I'm happy to report that Shauna will read from her work Fool's Gold, which will pretty much knock your socks off. Now, for more of Kay, visit her website, kjb.me.uk. And for more of Shauna, check out her website, shaunagermain.com. They're both on Facebook and Twitter, too. And I will have all of these links in today's podcast posting on my site, drdicksexadvice.com. Today's show is sponsored by the Perfect Fit brand. The Perfect Fit brand is a relative newcomer to the adult product marketplace. You know, my constant complaint about the sex toy industry's old guard is that it's stodgy and old-fashioned, and they often put profit way ahead of people. Not so with the Perfect Fit brand. There seems to be no end to their creativity and innovation, as well as their commitment to making healthy, fun, and sexy products that won't fuck up the environment. So yay for that!
I was at school with his brother, Bafty, tremendous bloke. He was head of my house. Buggered me senseless. Still, taught me a thing or two about life.
That's so good to know. Oh, now, all of the Perfect Fit brand products are designed and developed in-house. And that, sex fans, ensures quality in both materials and functionality. But hey, don't take my word for it. Check out what the Dr. Dick review crew is saying about the Perfect Fit brand. Use the search function in the header of either one of my sites, drdicksexadvice.com, or drdicksextoyreviews.com, type in Perfect Fit brand, and presto! And here's a tip, check out our latest review of their amazing tunnel plug. It was posted just last week. So trust me, once you've read the review, you'll want to pick one up for yourself. So look for the Perfect Fit brand banner in the sidebar of my sites and visit them today. Your sex life will never be the same. Okay, on with the show. Kay and Shauna, welcome back to the Erotic Mind Show. We're making history with this unique episode. Each of you has been on the show before, so having you back for another go is pretty novel. And having you both on the same show is also pretty damn remarkable. But the reason for getting us together is what really sets this show apart from its predecessors, and I'll get to that in a minute. But right now, I would like each of you to say hello to all the nice people.
Hi, hello.
Hello, this is Shauna. Sorry.
And the first voice you heard was Kay. See, we're going to have to get used to that. And considering that we will be talking about some pretty edgy stuff today, I think it's safe to say that there will be a bunch of big fat perverts in our audience too. So you want to say hello to them as well?
Hi to big fat perverts.
And this is Shauna, and I say hi to everyone who's not nice.
Alrighty then. Good, good, good. So, Kay, you were last on the show back in September 2008. And in fact, you and I inaugurated the Erotic Mind series with that interview. And Shauna, you were last on the show back in March of 2009. And here it is, nearly the end of 2012. Where does the time go? So I know we should start the show by having each of you guys update us on what's been going on in your alleged life since our last visit together. 4 years ago, Kay, you had just published your first volume of erotica titled The Collector, and now you are this amazing powerhouse serving up some of the most delectable and sophisticated literary erotica available anywhere. You've been contributing to numerous anthologies, and you now have a trilogy of novels hitting store shelves. So bring us up to date, why don't you?
Right, yeah, well, it's been a bit of a whirlwind since you were kind enough to invite me on after the Oyster Girls very nicely suggested that we have a chat.
And it's all your success is my because of me.
It's completely yours. Completely yours. I would be nothing without you.
There you go.
It's true.
There you go.
Well, I mean, since that time, I've written another 70 short stories.
Wow.
I've had three novels published, the latest of which comes out next Wednesday, which is called Making Him Wait, which is a BDSM-style novel about an artist who specializes in erotic paintings. I have got several shorts coming out, as I say, new one in the Best Bondage, which I'm particularly pleased about, because if you can get into the Best Of collections, you're not doing too badly. And ironically, here we are, it's almost 4 years to the month. I think it was a September last time, it's October this time. The Collector has just been re-released and has a nice shiny new cover, and will be hitting the stores on Monday. All good, all non-stop, absolutely shattered.
And Shauna, you were last on the show back in March 2009. It's been nearly 4 years since your last visit. So you've shaken the world of erotica to its foundation with your award-winning work. Could you give us an overview of what you've been doing since the spring of 2009?
Yeah, I really just want Kay's life. Can we just trade for the morning? I have mostly been writing a lot of short fiction. I had an anthology collection come out from Cleus Press that I edited earlier this year called Bound by Lust, which is all BDSM erotic romance. And I just kickstarted a successful book called Geek Love, which is all geek erotica stories, art, and comics. And that will be out as an ebook next month. Yeah, and then as a print book probably in the very early part of 2013. And most recently, I just signed on with a novel for HarperCollins UK and a nonfiction book for Cleus Press.
Wow. And you guys probably remember that back when we recorded our first conversations together, I was lamenting the fact that I had yet to be published, even though I had a bunch of manuscripts sitting on the shelf. And I was published in 2011 with Secrecy, Sophistry, and Gay Sex in the Catholic Church, and just this past May with The Amateur's Guide to Death and Dying. So, hooray for all of us, because we did some really remarkable stuff, I think.
Yeah, what a trio.
Yeah, really. Holy cow, we got everything covered.
And I should say, I don't know if you've read Richard's books, Shauna, but they are very good.
Sweet.
They are very good. They are. I had the privilege of having a pre-publication peep, and they were they are very good.
Well, thank you very much. Excellent. And Kay is editing my children's book that is coming out next month, hopefully. And so yay for that. A previous guest on this show, David Cantero, an artist from Spain, is doing the illustrations. So
for that. Really good.
Good.
Wow.
So now the reason that we are here together is very interesting. So early last summer, Shauna, you recall, you wrote to me suggesting that I spend a show talking about the 50 Shades of Grey phenomenon. You had just published Bound by Lust, Romantic Stories of Submission and Sensuality, and you proposed a show where we would focus on why good, edgy erotica is the antidote to 50 Shades of Grey. And of course, I thought that was a fantastic idea. And meanwhile,
well, you just made me sound really smart. I'm not sure. I'm not sure my email was anywhere near that.
Oh, but it was. I was taking that directly from you.
It was just an excuse that you wanted to do this, and you were
actually,
that.
That's actually true.
So meanwhile, Kay and I were discussing much of the same thing in an email exchange we were having, and then I had the brilliant idea of having you both on this show at the same time so that we could really rock out this topic. So you guys knew of each other's work, of course, but you have never met or e-met until I sent you an introduction and remedied that, I think. Is that
yes,
true?
Yes, that is true.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Knew of each other's work, I think.
Yes.
I certainly did, but no, there's a few miles between us, honey.
Yes. Right, and Kay, you are in London, and Shauna, you are in Portland, Oregon, right? Yes?
I'm actually in Seattle right now.
Are you really? What are you doing here?
What am I doing here?
In the Emerald City. Nobody told me you were
I'm
arriving.
I'm sitting outside your house.
Oh, no! Yikes!
No professional stalker alert. And I'm not in London either, honey.
Right. Well, in the UK. You know, everybody in America, everything that is not America is that other place over there.
I'll get on a train, travel 2.5 hours, and then I'll be there.
Okay.
I'll be there.
All right. So, let's see what's on your minds as we hit off this conversation. Kay, you know a little something about the 50 Shades of Grey trilogy and the author. Tell us what you know. This is a product of the UK, right?
Well, I'm afraid so. Yes, it has to put its hands up to this one. Written by James, of course. It was published back in April. It feels like it's been out there a lot longer than that, doesn't it?
True.
But it was only April. Published by Arrow Books. And in its original form, it was fan fiction. It was written purely for the author's own entertainment and fun. And it was a homage to the Twilight saga.
That's right.
Of books.
That's right.
So basically what happened is she transposed the complex relationship between a vampire and a human and swapped it for a complex relationship between a quite frighteningly disturbed man with major psychological issues and a very unworldly 22-year-old woman who must be the only woman in the Western world with no mobile phone. I mean, you know, that it's slightly unreal concept, but there you go. And, of course, what's happened is, as I understand it, I mean, I don't know, James, all the information I've got from the
right.
press and
right.
The media coverage, which of course has been ginormous, particularly over here because it's a UK production. It was picked up by a publisher who saw the marketing potential, was taken, turned into the three novels. And of course, it isn't actually a book about sex, but the sex scenes are such that they have been picked up and people have run with them.
No.
What it's really about is an unsustainable relationship.
Right. Do you have stuff to add to that, Shauna?
Yeah, I mean, I think I always find it difficult to talk about that book because I want to talk about so many things at once.
Right.
And, you know, for me, part of it, you know, I mean, we could talk about the writing, we could talk about its success, we could talk about its covers, we can also talk about its portrayal of BDSM you know, both as a sexual thing and as a culture. So yeah, there's just so much that I feel, sometimes I feel a little overwhelmed on where to begin on the topic of it.
Right. So I'm going to guess that both the author and her publisher were completely surprised by the wild popularity of the book.
I don't know if the publisher would have been that surprised. I think if you're going to take a risk on publishing something that's, shall we say, not perfectly put together, then I think they probably expected it to do well, but I mean, probably not this well.
Right.
And if press reports are to believe, then James has been totally overwhelmed by it all, and, you know, unsurprisingly. But, I mean, if you think about it, who would have imagined that three books, which are not going to go down in the history of the best literature, has been responsible for 500% rise in the sale of sex toys in the UK and America alone.
It's true.
It is.
Isn't
it is.
Amazing?
It's mind-boggling.
But yeah, without putting too fine a point on it, the trilogy has been getting very poor reviews, as you suggest, for its literary merit. And despite its wild popularity, that has got to sting both the author and publisher, I would guess, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, just out of curiosity, I had a look at the Amazon reviews.
Yes.
And it's a bizarre thing. It's a definite 50-50 split. You've got several thousand giving a five-star rating.
Mm-hmm.
You have several thousand, almost an identical number, giving like a one-star rating. With reviews which I just wouldn't be able to get out of bed in the morning if I had reviews like that. And very few people in the middle ground. You are, it is a love it, or oh my god, this is so bad situation.
Shauna, do you are you concur with that? I'm guessing.
I do. I find it really fascinating how willing people are to publicly slam the book while also reading it in private. I think that says a lot about its appeal. And so I think what's happening is that the topic and the acceptance people find very appealing, and they do. And even if they don't struggle with the writing, I think there's actually pressure now for people to say, oh, that, you know, this book isn't good, or this writing is bad. And so there's this weird thing happening where people want to be part of the club, but then it's also part of the cool club right now to sort of slam it. And so it seems as though people don't really know, you know, that perhaps what they think about the book in private is actually different than what they're articulating about the book in both directions.
Right.
Yeah.
And since we're all published authors, I think we all can identify with this. No amount of popularity or royalties can make up for the awful feeling of getting trashed in public. I have been on the receiving end of this, particularly with regard to my book about my time as a Catholic priest. Have either of you been publicly trashed for your work?
I've been quite fortunate with reviews lately, but I had one that I don't think I'll ever forget, which absolutely slammed my short erotic romance called A Sticky Situation, which ironically is the best-selling thing I've ever done, because I wrote in English and not American.
I know, remember you telling me that. I thought, like, oh my god.
The woman that was writing the review wrote this quite good review and then ripped me personally apart because I'd used English words, which I wouldn't have done if the book was set in America, had Americans in it. I was American.
All of those.
I'm not American. The book was set in Oxfordshire. It had English people in it. It was for an English and publish house. You know, it was just, you know, I wasn't trying to, you know, if I'd been trying to make it American and, like, failed, if I'd talked about, you know, terrace houses and duvets and you know, sort of grilled bacon or whatever, you know, it's just fine, shoot me now. But I wasn't trying to do that, you know. So and it was very personal. It was quite hurtful.
Right.
If they do not like the book, that's fine. People can like books and not like books. It's all personal. But don't attack me. I'm just trying.
I like your accent, and I like your accent in your work, too, because English smut is the best kind, if you ask me.
But I mean, it's just personal, isn't it? But,
right. How about you, Shauna? Have you been on the receiving end of such stuff?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. There's a whole level of things, right? So there are some things where it's clearly ignorance. And I think that's probably part of what happens when words aren't spelled the way that we expect. Or, you know, and I had someone who rated Best Lesbian Erotica, which I was in, and they rated it 1 star because it was all women. And I looked at that review because I thought, wait, what? And
did
then
they read the cover right?
Yeah, I mean, all you have to do is read the title to sort of give you an idea. Yes.
I love this. Oh my God.
So reviews like that are really easy for me to sort of write off, right? Reviews where the reviewer has done a good job, has read the book, understands the book, the review is well thought out, and they mention a problem that actually possibly exists, those are harder for me because I realize that that actually falls on my shoulders as something
right.
that get fixed in the writing or the editing.
Right.
And it's interesting that for me that also has been with my most popular book, which is a novella that came out earlier this year. And it's definitely gotten the most praise and the most sales, but it's also gotten some of the worst reviews.
Wow.
And so I find it interesting. And I don't know if that's a thing that happens when you just hit a certain level of mass readership.
Mm-hmm.
Likely to get more negative reviews, or if it's that there's something that makes it more readable and more purchasable, also makes it more open to getting negative reviews.
Right. So, do you suppose people write reviews just so that they can have their name associated with the title? That's the kind of thing that I'm discovering is that you know people want to count coup on us as authors because they have an axe to grind, particularly you know really mainline you know conservative Catholics. I'm a real easy target.
I think you're probably more of a name for that sort of thing than probably we are. I think with the review I was describing just now, further research into this particular person found that she obviously had an issue with English writers and had hammered
right.
several others in the same way. But it's interesting what you are saying, Shauna. Out of interest, was that novella the one you did for Excite?
It was,
yes. The Library one. Now,
yep.
So was my one, the Secret Library one I was talking about. Again, the most popular thing I've ever written. And I'll totally agree with you. I've had more good reviews and yet also the worst reviews I've ever had for anything. And yet it's the best-selling piece I've ever
funny.
Done.
It really is funny.
I mean, go figure. But I think you're probably right. I think it's just when we're hitting a bigger audience.
Right.
And I happen to know that yours was the best-selling of all of them. So, you know, wow.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, there you go. I was hot in your heels, but you picked me.
I also think that there is something that happens... And I have a lot of theories on why this is, but I think that there's something that happens where reviewers stop seeing creative people as people.
Oh, that's so true.
And so they're not thinking about, you know, you as an author, as a person. They're thinking about you as this sort of thing, this entity that isn't real and that doesn't necessarily have feelings and that isn't going to be impacted by what they write or say. And so being a writer has actually changed. Like, I won't do negative reviews anymore. I leave them to someone else because I feel like I know how hard it is to put your work out there. And while constructive criticism is a fantastic thing, being treated as a non-entity or as a non-person by people it can really start to shave your skin down.
Oh, it's so
it
true.
Hurts.
It really is true. And even though everyone tells us, you know, when we are published, that never take anything personally. It's really hard not to. I mean, when they call me by name or you, or, you know, and say, you know, you're a shit, you know, you write crap or, you know, this is a terrible thing and God hates you and you're going to hell. So, neener, neener. Well, you can't hardly answer that, can you?
Okay.
So anyhow, back to our topic. The 50 Shades of Grey phenomenon, the media went wild with this, and not just because of the saucy nature of the content, but that women all over the world were buying copies and devouring them in public. Up until this point, erotica, especially edgy erotica, was generally consumed in the privacy of one's bedroom, living room couch, or the family dungeon. So... What about that? I mean, what about that the media thought, you know, that this was an amazing thing because women were reading saucy stuff? Apparently, they hadn't known about erotica up to this point.
That's right. Don't even get me started. We didn't exist.
That's
nothing
right.
That we did before, nothing that we'll ever do again will exist without it being compared to 50 Shades. And that is nothing to do with the author or the book or how good it is or how bad it is. That's what the media has created.
Right.
And suddenly it's, you know, maybe it's cool now. Maybe it's just this wonderful thing that people can sort of say, yes, I do read this. But yes, women read erotica. Well, you know, women are filthy beasts.
I've known one or two like that.
Don't you know? Yeah.
And they're right here sitting talking to me.
I was going to ask if you would introduce me to them.
our time is winding down, and I want to make sure that we have time for one of you, Shauna, I hope, to share some of your writing as the antidote to 50 Shades. Could you launch into something for us?
Sure. I think I'm gonna read a piece from Fool's Gold, which is a story of it's a very modern retelling of a fairy tale with some bondage. And I picked this because a lot of my stories are incredibly lyrical, but this one actually isn't. It has a very plain language. It's a very modern context and setting. And so I think it's an interesting juxtaposition to when we look at different ways to write with a modern sort of voice and slant. So this is my piece, Fool's Gold, and the first section is called Spin a Yarn. It was a random boast. Too many gin and tonics, too aware of how my ass looked in a new pair of dark jeans. Far too aware of how he'd been watching me across the loud space of a bar table all night. Long fingers reaching up to push back a few strands of dark hair away from his blue eyes. Not a close friend, but still friend. And for long enough that you'd think I'd have noticed him that way before. But sometimes that's how it happens. A flip switches, and the guy at the edge slips into the center. He is suddenly all you can see. The flip was the conversation that turned from usual drunken rants to sex, specifically to bondage sex. After a few minutes of the boys around the table laughing and the girls not saying much, I pushed the lime into my gin and tonic with the end of my stir stick. I don't really know what the big deal is, I said. I imagined being stuck somewhere, seat belted in, unable to reach the drink holders or turn the knobs on a dashboard. I like to move when I have sex. Why be tied down? Suddenly, the quiet man I mostly knew from group nights out was leaning across the table, creating near-perfect paper strips from the bar napkin, talking about ropes and twine and knots in a power voice, a low light flickering in his eyes. He wasn't talking to me, not specifically, but his gaze flicked to my wrists. "There's freedom in constraints," he said. I curled my hands around the glass, the bones feeling exposed, the pulse thump-thumping beneath my skin. "There's constraints in constraints," I countered. My words had made more sense in my head. He followed the movement of my hand with his eyes, tearing another perfect strip from the edge of his napkin as he waved my comment away. "It's not really about what you use to tie someone down," he said. "At least, not the physical thing you use to tie someone down." He laid the thin strip of torn napkin over my wrist, holding the edges with a few fingers to the table, as though paper and pressure was enough to keep me there. "It's other things, isn't it, Ellie?" His eyes settled on mine, such intense blue like a weight all their own, trying to keep me against the overly warm bar seat. I dropped my gaze to watch the lime floating in my drink, raising both shoulders in a shrug, my wrist slipping along beneath the paper. "You're asking the wrong girl," I said, when I could finally meet his eyes again. He arched a brow, the low bar lights flaring in his gaze as he shifted his head. "Am I?" "Yes." The others faded away. Did they grow quiet on their own or just slip into the edges of my vision, sliding into a place he'd occupied so recently? I've never been bound to anything, man or bed or chair, and I don't intend to be. He stood suddenly, the lean movement of a predator, still holding the napkin strip against my wrist with one hand. His other hand snaked forward to tighten into the length of my blonde hair, fisting his fingers at the back of my neck to pull my head back slightly. My mouth gasped open. I couldn't help it. And then I was looking up at those blue eyes, darkening to near black on the edges. "No," he said. A single word, a challenge, something what I would have ignored most times, if not for the drinks, or for the fact that his fingers were still on either side of my wrist, tightening in, capturing my skin between them. If not for the way my body suddenly responded, a dizzying spin of want that left me hollow and wet. "No," I said, fingers digging into my head, holding me. I tugged my head forward, but his grip tightened. So tight I saw threads of black and gold through my vision, and still the blue of his eyes through it all. "You've never?" I didn't know if the others could hear me, even though leaning down slightly, the press of his fingers keeping there. "Called someone master?" I pulled my body away, although my hand inexplicably didn't follow. I wasn't sure I'd meant it to. "Hell no," I said, "and I never will." "Shall we bet on that?" he asked. I was sure the others could hear him now, as well as my own bitten back moan in response. What was my body doing, betrayer? Still, I suddenly and desperately wanted to prove this man wrong. I didn't know if it was to knock his ego a notch or soothe my own pulse, which was thumping hard. I took a deep, unsteady inhale. "What do I get if I win?" "You won't," he said. "Then there's no reason to bet, is there?" He laughed and let go of my hair, touching a single finger to the corner of my mouth as he bent and whispered, his lips whispering along the curve of my ear. "What's my name, Ellie?" I'm sure I looked at him like he was stupid. How long had we been friends? Of course I knew his name. "Jackson," I said. At the same time, I pulled my wrist up, breaking the napkin. As the paper split, releasing my wrist, he bowed down again to drag his teeth along the curve of my ear. "That's one," he said.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Yummy. You read, that's beautiful reading. You read really nicely. I'm very intimidated now.
See, there you go. That's what happens. That's what happens. Well, y'all, I'm looking at my clock and I see that our time is up for today. But before we go, I want you guys to give us your website addresses and tell us where we can buy your books.
Okay, you can find my website at www.kjb.me.uk. KJB is all one word. And you can buy everything that I've done so far off Amazon. And my two novels, The Perfect and The Voyeur, are also available from Excite. And my latest novel, Making Him Wait, is also available from the Sweetmeats Press.
Very cool. And we can link through to buy your books through your site, yes?
Oh, yeah. On my site, each book has its own little page. And just click on the cover picture, and you'll get right through to all the details you need.
Excellent. Shauna?
And I can be found at shaunagermain.com, which is totally spelled funny, but I know you guys are all smart, and you will figure it out.
And I'll have links in today's podcast posting.
I figured as much. And you can buy, most of my stuff is all over the place. So you can buy it at Amazon, at Nook. You can also buy it in most brick-and-mortar bookstores, including Barnes & Noble here in the Pacific Northwest at Powell's, and all kinds of places like that.
Good, good, good. So before we leave, I just have to ask, you guys could come back and talk to us again next week, right? Because I have, like, 6 more pages of questions I want to ask you guys, and you know, we just got started today, so any chance you could both come back next week?
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Oh, you guys are so good. Alrighty then, so until next week, we will be visiting you in cyberspace. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you for having
me. Thank you.
An amazing show, huh? Well, that's it for today, sex fans. I'm so glad that you could join me. Tune in next week at this time for part 2 of my conversation with Kay and Shauna, and more sex advice with an edge with your host, me, Dr. Dick. Again, this week's podcast sponsor is the fabulous Perfect Fit brand.
You are drunk. You can't even remember. You got a wife.
I've never been that drunk, I can assure you. So, this innovative sex toy company is kicking ass all over the world. They're racking up award nominations at all the industry shows, and while that is all well and good, mind you, the real test is how their customers are responding to their product line. Well, to make a long story short, they are blowing the competition out of the water. The Perfect Fit brand's slogan says it all. Amazing is our standard. In addition to all their fun, sexy products for both guys and gals, this company has a social conscience. And besides sponsoring my sex-positive shows, they are also contributing to communities where their employees and customers live. Their contributions come in many forms, like fundraising, product donations, as well as support to nonprofit groups. So click on their banner in the sidebar of my site and see what all the buzz is about. I assure you, your sex life will never be the same. And don't forget to look for the reviews of all their products, particularly their wild tunnel plug on DrDicksSexToyReviews.com. Use the search function in the header, type in Perfect Fit Brand, and bang! All right, until next week, remember, sex is good, and good sex? Why, that's even better. Over and out.